Here we go with Gonzaga Nation SI. I'm one of your two hosts, Dan Dick, alongside former Gonzaga Bulldog legend on the court, legend on the mic, on the radio side with Tom Hudson, Adam Moore, and Mo. How goes it?
Good. How are you doing?
I can't complain too much other than the fact that the snow is still in Spokane. I'm getting sick of it. You had a chance to at least get out of it and call the game at Portland last week. Those return games after you've put a beat down on a team can be difficult, but I thought Gonzaga had a really good approach to it. What did you see?
Yeah, I had the makings of being a trap game with Santa Clara, St. Mary's coming up. Then you mentioned we played them, I think it was like 12 days before, won by 40 something. But I thought our guys, you know, concentration level was there. We knew Portland was going to play better at home. Their plan was better defensively. Obviously, we'll get into the 40-point game from Julian Strother, but I thought our guys came out, you know, focused and understood the task at hand. It's always hard playing those type of games. In Portland, though, it's always kind of a 50-50 crowd, so it's kind of a quasi-home game for us as well. So that helps the concentration level, I think, a little bit. So I was pleased. I mean, some people are not happy that we, you know, only beat them by 15 or whatever compared to 40, but it's, you can't, you know, absolutely beat teams down, especially at, you know, at their place when they make adjustments. So I was pleased with the performance, and then watching Julian Strother get 40 was special.
Yeah, that 40 piece, when I went back and watched it, it was like effortless, probably. I won't say it was that, but it was a all-around consistent performance throughout the night. And you know, everybody's going to get excited about the 8-for-12 from the three-point line, which they should. But I saw a player who, to get those 8 threes when Drew was getting doubled, he did the right thing. He got into Drew's vision. He had terrific spacing, and he was prepared. Then I also thought this might have been the best game he's had that I can remember, at least as far as cutting off the ball. Like, he had a couple basket cuts where maybe he didn't even receive a pass to get the layup, but he cut at the right times. What did you see from his performance?
Yeah, I mean, he was 14-21 overall, so it was a 40-point game that was, you know, mainly getting buckets, not a lot from the free throw line. He was 4-for-4. Obviously, the 3-point field goal makes the 8. The record was 9. I think it was yourself. I think Wilch had one of those games, and then Corey had a game against Iowa, I think, a couple years ago. So he had a legit chance of having that record. He was 5-for-7 in the first half. But I thought he drove against closeouts really well in that game, made probably 3 or 4 floaters in the lane, you know, his little 2-foot kind of shot put floater that he has. So I was really impressed with the variety of the ways he scored. Obviously, he got hot from downtown, but he mixed it up with some drives against momentum. You mentioned the cutting, because they did a great job on Drew. Drew only had 8 points. I think he was 3-for-7, if my memory serves. You know, so they did a good job of kind of double teaming or digging down. And, you know, like you said, he found the right open areas, but it was a complete scoring game, you know, from the 3-point line, obviously making 4-for-4 from three. And then, like I mentioned, those in between mid-range jumpers.
So you had a couple 40-point games yourself. There's only been a number of guys over the last, you know, 20 years of Gonzaga basketball that have done that. I believe Wiltshire had one. Timmy hasn't even had one. He's got the career high 38. But a 40 piece is hard to come from or come to. When you look back at the games that you had 40, and I think you had 3 or 4, if I'm not mistaken, what was that game like? Was it just easy? Was there something motivating you? How did you get to those 40-point nights?
I think it's just one of those deals where you get in a groove and a rhythm. And, you know, at the time when I got them, I think I had 5 my junior year. I had a great whistle, so that was part of it. You get to the free throw line. You have to be a little bit crafty, too. It's not just about making jumpers. It's about, you know, getting a putback, getting a leak out, you know, scoring 6-8 points that way. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of the times it's just letting the game come to you, and sometimes you get hot and it gets rolling and it's fun, you know, fun experience.
Yeah, looking back at my career, I had 39 once at Gonzaga. I should have made one more free throw or just chucked up one shot to get to that barrier. I had 34 and a half and I didn't score in the second half. And I remember clearly the very next, a couple months later. So this was my senior year at LMU, 34 and a half, took one shot in the second half. When I'm with the Hawks the very next year, we're practicing at LMU and we're kind of in that stretch circle to start practice. And the guys are looking around, you know, the banners of all the schools in the program. And Glenn Big Dog Robinson, he looks at me and goes, "Dan, you played here? This is a high school." I was like, "Come on, dog. I know it's a high school gym, you know, but this was in our league. We dominated all these teams." He goes, "How many did you have against them last year?" I said, 34. He goes, "Damn, 34? I said, "Yeah, they were all in the first half." He looked at me, he goes, "You should have gone for 50, you dumbass."
Yeah, I thought, you know, like I said, I mentioned the 5-7 for Julian in the first half. And I was like, let's see somebody get 10 3-point makes. You know, let's see a Gonzaga record that nobody has. But yeah, I had, there's some games where I had that, you know, 30 in the first half. And in your mind, you're like, can I get 50? And then I think Coach Few kind of pulls the reins on guys a little bit. And so that's part of it. But yeah, it's just fun getting out there and, you know, having those type of nights.
So what was your career high in the NBA? Do you remember?
30.
You got a 30 piece. Who was it against?
Pacers.
Who was guarding you? Was that Reggie would have been retired by then.
No, I think it was Steven Jackson. And I can't remember who else was on that club. I came off the bench the game, and then Gerald Wallace got hurt, so I played starter minutes and just had a good game.
Steven Jackson, I was teammates with him with a stretch with the Hawks. I can imagine you got going, and he was probably talking some trash. And I know if anybody talks junk to you, your competitive juices get flowing. Was it one of those kind of atmospheres that night?
No, I don't think it was nothing like that. It's just, you know, NBA game where you get going and you feel good and shots go in.
Awesome. Yeah, you beat me there. I think mine was 28 against Orlando. So good times, good games. Speaking of NBA, Gonzaga's continued to put a lot of guys in the NBA. Andrew Nembhard, I think, is exceeding a lot of people's expectations when you see, hey, second-round pick. But for guys like you and I that have talked about his game, he covered a lot of holes for Gonzaga the last couple of years. And I know I thought he was ready. I know you thought he was ready for the NBA. He's having a great rookie year. He's in that Rising Stars game. You were part of the Rising Stars game early in your career. What is the NBA All-Star weekend like when you're part of one of those big events?
I was in the Vegas one. It was the rookie sophomore one.
I had friends that went down there, so I can only imagine the lack of...
Yeah, it was complete chaos. It was obviously a great experience, but it was not the best thing for the city of Las Vegas to get a professional franchise. I think that's why they delayed it about 10 years to get the Vegas Raiders. But yeah, I mean, it was obviously fun to be a part of the NBA's aspect of that, but riffraff besides was chaos. And just to be frank, like it was absolutely nuts in Vegas. All-Star weekend always is nuts. But you add the Vegas element to it and the ability for people to get there and then just all the things that you can get into in Vegas, good or bad. So it was absolutely, I mean, berserk chaos.
I went to the All-Star game one year. My rookie year was hosted in Atlanta. I was playing for the Hawks. I was one of the spokespeople for the All-Star game that year. So I was a part of a number of events. I don't think as a college player you realize just how big and massive events like NBA All-Star Weekend are. I know you and I have both been to the Final Four now. It's a really cool and unique atmosphere, but there's really nothing like the NBA All-Star game. I think the only thing I can compare it to would be the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've never been to a Super Bowl, so I can't attest to that. But it's obviously their biggest event beside the finals. So, and they're professionals at it. It's a billion-dollar league, billion-dollar-plus league. So they, you know, they got it all figured out. But there's a lot going on.
So that kind of leads me to the question I wasn't preparing for either of us to answer. Bucket list sporting events. I mean, the Final Four for a lot of people is a bucket list event to go to. An All-Star game is a bucket list. I've never been to the Super Bowl either. If I were to have a bucket list sporting event, it would probably be the Masters. I've been to the U.S. Open when it was at Chambers Bay. I've been to the tour championship when it was at East Lake in Atlanta, but being a golfer, I think Augusta and being at the Masters would be the top of the list. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's one of the events. The Chambers Bay U.S. Open was the worst sporting event I've ever been to, by the way.
It was bad.
I threw that out there. It was terrible, and we're not the only people that thought that. There'd be World Cup finals, things of that nature. We're going to have an opportunity with it coming to the United States. Something like that. A Super Bowl would be fun. I had an opportunity to go to one when it was in Arizona. I think it was the year the Giants beat the Patriots, and we were playing Phoenix two nights later, and we all had chances to buy tickets. And I think the cheapest ticket was like $4,800 or something. So I was like, yeah, I'll watch it in the hotel room and call it good. Could have went to like one of the best Super Bowls of all time. Anything major event like World Cup soccer, I think would be cool. Definitely the Masters. Do you put your name in the hat for that?
I haven't yet. I have a friend who invited me a couple years ago, and he said it's an open invitation. But that's like the hardest time of the year, being that it's right after the college basketball season. Yep. Usually falls around Easter and or spring break. So it's a bucket list. At some point, I will get there. That would be pretty cool. Who's your pick? Because Eagles, Chiefs, I haven't followed it very close.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the Chiefs. I mean, obviously, the Philadelphia's had one of the best seasons they've had in recent history, but I'm a big Patrick Mahomes fan. I was a Brett Favre fan, and it looks a lot like Brett Favre, but a lot better, a lot more better decision-making, and that's not a knock on Brett Favre, but I like the gunslinger, so I like the Chiefs, but I am one of those nerd fans that go, I just want to watch a good game, and that's really how I watch most sporting events, I guess.
That's funny. I didn't know you were a Brett Favre guy. That's my favorite quarterback of all time as well. Awesome. I look forward to watching the game as well. It's crazy. It's a 2-week buildup, but with all the media attention that the NFL and the Super Bowl generates, it makes sense. So appreciate it. We'll be back soon for our episode 2 of this week, where we talk a little bit about Santa Clara and St. Mary's.